I mean, if, again, if you don't know who Ed Thorpe is, I would consider Googling it. And I compared it in the story to like a bunch of like physicists meeting Einstein. Like, without exaggeration, if Ed Thorpe doesn't exist, the whole world of Advantage Play, I mean, I guess somebody else might have figured it out eventually, but it wouldn't exist the way it exists right now. This is right. A man that, like, legitimately, no questions asked, changed the course of gambling history.
Welcome once again to Low Rollers, the gambling industry podcast that Kalshi CEO Tariq Mansour has never called a source of truth, and we regard that as a badge of honor. I am Eric Raskin, senior editor at Casino Reports, and the podcast is called Low Rollers, plural, and the title made sense initially. It no longer makes much sense because I am now a solo host, but this week it makes sense again. The original Low Rollers are reunited. My guest is Jeff Edelstein, my former co-host. We're going to talk about Jeff's recent adventures in Vegas, his first time at the top-secret, highly-exclusive blackjack ball, his thoughts on the recent NBA scandals, and the two podcasts he hosts these days. There are Rottweilers and Dildos and butchered George Carlin quotes, so you'll want to stick around for that. My conversation with Jeff is coming up in just a few minutes. But first, my quick thoughts on something that's been in the news lately. A gambling legal case that we've been covering on Casino Reports, but has mostly flown under the radar otherwise. My colleague Jill Dorson caught wind of this and has been writing about it for us. The case involves a New Jersey online casino player, Larry Merck, suing BetMGM over a promo contest. I've seen similar contests on some of the apps I use in Pennsylvania, so I get the gist, even though I've never tried to compete in any of these, because they're leaderboard contests where a low roller like me has no chance. You have to be willing to spend big, big money to win money. The more you spend, win or lose, on a particular game or games over a given time period, the higher you are on the leaderboard, and the positions near the top pay predetermined amounts, and in this case, first place, for the most money spent over the month that the contest ran on BetMGM, which was in May 2021, the prize for first place was $500,000 of casino bonus and 100 free spins per day for a month. So let's just say you're confident betting $1 million will win you the contest. If you bet $1 million on a game that has, let's just say, a 95% return to player, that means you expect to lose $50,000. But then you're rewarded with $500,000 in casino bonus, not the same as cash. You have to play through it before you can withdraw it. Plus, you get the bonus spins, yada, yada. You can work out the math in advance to determine just how plus EV this is. And if you finish in first place on the leaderboard, you are coming out way ahead. And if you don't, maybe you're not coming out ahead. So Larry Merck crunched the numbers, knew what he believed he had to do, and 10 days into the contest, he was in first place. He looked on the 11th day, and he was now in second place, his $350,000 wagered way behind MJ Broker 11969, who was credited with $800,000, which seemed to Merck an impossible ascension for a single day. It turned out MJ Broker was a BetMGM VIP who had been accidentally playing the wrong game, and his stats weren't counting toward the contest, and he said something to his VIP host, and BetMGM agreed to just transfer his play over so his stats counted. From there, it's a lot of legal back and forth. The terms and conditions that Merck signed basically say BetMGM has the right to do what it wants. It can change the rules on the fly if it wants to. I don't know what the courts will determine here. I do know that if I understand the facts of the case correctly, then in a moral sense, a fairness sense, a competitive sense, BetMGM can't pull this crap. This isn't the player against the house. This is players competing against other players, and it has to be an even playing field with full transparency where if MJ Broker is outspending Merck on day one, Merck needs to see that and know that and be able to decide whether he's going to keep spending big to win or concede that he can't win and stop spending. Maybe the terms and conditions allow all this, and maybe the court will find in BetMGM's favor, but just from a player's perspective, in terms of the difference between an operator taking a player's money in a fair way and an operator taking a player's money in a deceptive way, this is a slam dunk. Again, you know, unless the facts are different than what has been presented so far in the case, then it's another story maybe. But based on the facts as presented, Merck is in the right from a fairness standpoint. BetMGM is in the wrong, and I hope Larry Merck wins. To quote the most overquoted line in gambling pop culture, pay that man his money. Sorry for the mediocre Teddy KGB impression. All right, let's get to the interview. So enjoy a few seconds of music, and when I come back, I'll be joined by my old pal, your old pal too, Jeff Edelstein. Somehow, I survived 5 episodes without him, but I need my fix. You know him, you love him, you missed him. But as promised when we went our separate podcasting ways, I said he'd be back every month or two to rekindle the Low Rollers magic. And so here he is in his first appearance as a guest, the host of the Business of Betting podcast and Primetime Props, Jeff Edelstein. Jeff, how you been? He asks, as if we don't still communicate daily.
I'd probably talk to you, if you know, with messaging, Slack. I'd probably talk to you as much, if not more, than I talk to members of my own family that live in my house, which, you know, so take that any way you like.
Not all members of your own family, some members of your own family. If you talk to me more than any member of your own family, that's a problem.
There's days that I talk to you more than I talk to anyone in my house. That is for sure.
Okay. Well, we're actually talking and recording it. So we have to try to say interesting things,
which absolutely.
There's normally no pressure on us to do so, but
no.
You have many interesting things to talk about though. Many topics we'll hit that cover the span since you last spoke to the Low Rollers audience. And I think the place to start is that you've racked up a lot of frequent flyer miles, including two work trips to Vegas. I got to have your thoughts on Vegas in 2025 as someone who hadn't been there in the previous 30 years or so.
All right. So it's true. The last time I was at Vegas was the summer of 1995. I stayed at the Stardust. I had a blast. We just had a good time. We won money. We ate steak. It was a lot of fun.
Who is we? That you were like with buddies?
Me and a buddy of mine, my buddy Jason. We had both graduated college. I was a waiter at the Olive Garden. He called me up one day. He's like, what are you doing for the next month or two? I said, nothing. He's like, let's go cross country. I said, let's go cross country. And we did. And that was it. And Vegas was a stop. But yeah, so that's the last time I was in Vegas. So then I went to Vegas for G2E. That which was a kind of a last minute thing, and I stayed. You know, G2E is held at the Venetian.
Right.
I stayed at the Venetian. Outside of going to Walgreens, like a block up the street, to get some iced coffee so that I could have it in my room when I woke up in the morning, I didn't leave the hotel. No reason to leave the hotel. A, I was working most of the time, but B, there's 50 restaurants and, you know, 100 shops, and my hotel room, every room's a suite. It was like 750 square feet. I didn't want to leave ever.
Right.
I was perfectly happy staying in the hotel. So that was, I love Vegas. Vegas is awesome.
Right.
Then I went back a couple last weekend for the blackjack ball, which I'm sure we'll discuss. Mm-hmm. And in an effort to, you know, save the bosses some money instead of staying. I was only going for a night.
Right.
And I was only going to be in Vegas for 24 hours. So I thought, well, I don't need to stay at like the Venetian. So I stayed at a well-reviewed Holiday Inn. It was fine. I decided at like 2 in the afternoon, and the Holiday Inn is like down like by the MGM Grand.
Okay.
I don't know where on the strip this is. Middle, end, beginning. I have no idea.
MGM Grand is middle-ish, but the Holiday Inn is like kind of behind it off the strip by a block or two or something.
Yep, okay. Exactly. Behind the Denny's. Right. We'll talk about it. But so I decided, well, you know what? I'll take a quick walk on the strip just to get the, you know, the full, you know, Vegas experience. It's at like a tacky Times Square, which is, and I understand, wow. and I understand what I'm saying
right.
when I say that. But yeah, I was surprised, honestly, at the amount.
That's like saying something is a Jewier Low Rollers.
I was surprised. I was surprised at the amount of, again, this is 2 in the afternoon. I can only imagine what it's like at, you know, midnight. But I was surprised at the amount of like homeless / destitute / you know, begging. I was surprised. I mean, I was offered, you know, I had more than one person come up to me to ask me what I needed. What I needed was a shower, quite frankly.
Right.
Yeah, I was. I didn't see like any pl notable police presence. Like, I wasn't impressed, frankly.
Right.
I feel like they could be doing a little bit of a better job. And there were definitely some like first time fam. Again, I was 20 minutes up and down. I definitely saw some like first time families, like mom, dad, little kids, that were a little surprised that it
Right.
wasn't quite as Times Square-y as they might have originally hoped, right? It felt like Times Square from 30 years ago.
Yeah, I in my early days of going to Vegas for work things in the late 90s, early 2000s, I never used to see families there at all. And
Right.
then I did start picking up that you would see a lot of families walking the strip, people pushing strollers, and I was kind of like, that's weird, but it still seemed it's something I wouldn't do as a parent of young
Right.
children, but it seemed safe enough. And I feel like it's maybe taken a little bit of a turn in the last few years where it no longer feels like even a safe place, not just ill-advised, but just a little sketchy.
Well, yeah, it got very sketchy for me as I was leaving the strip. So I'm again, this is 2 in the afternoon. I'm walking back to the Holiday Inn, right? Well, here, I'll tell you the whole story. So I'm leaving the Holiday Inn, right? I'm leaving the Holiday Inn, and it's behind a Denny's, which like already I'm like, yeah, I should have had the bosses pay the extra $200 so I could stay in a nice joint. But I walk by this Denny's, and then I pass by. I can't even describe what it was, but it was like a giant concrete block. I don't know what it served, what purpose it served. It wasn't on the street. Maybe there was a lamp attached to it. I have no idea. But it was big enough that I didn't see the homeless couple and their three Rottweilers as I walked by, and it scared the shit out of me,
Right.
frothing at the mouth, on the leash. And they, oh, we're so sorry, we're so sorry. God bless you. Well, I'm like, okay, I don't carry cash. So I go to the strip, blah blah blah. I go to the strip. I'm relatively unimpressed. I'm walking back from the strip, and I'm saying, well, I am going to go past the Denny's and make my right hand turn to the Holiday Inn there, so as not to have to pass by the Rottweilers again.
Yes.
And at this point, a gentleman, probably around my age, maybe a little bit younger, wearing a tracksuit, screamed. I didn't see him, I just heard him. He screamed, I'm on the sidewalk, and he screams, "Look out!" And I predictably, look out. And then
Sure.
he laughs and says, "I'm just busting with you. I'm just playing with you, man." I go, "Ah, that's funny. Yeah, thank you." And then he starts walking lockstep with me, where he proceeds to start telling me a story. As you might imagine, I was not giving him any indication that I wanted to hear the story about
Right.
how he needed a shower because he just woke up in the presence of a woman he did not remember meeting, in a room filled with sex toys. And the last thing he remembers was taking ketamine. And I'm just walking. I'm like, holy shit, what is this? What is happening here? And, I'm not really showing much interest. And then I finally do get an opening at where I give him, well, whatever happens in Vegas, and he's like, yeah, it stays in Vegas. That's right. That's right. He's like, man, I need a shower. And we're walking, and I'm thinking, is he like indicating that he wants to take a shower in my hotel room? Is he planning on robbing me? Is he planning on using dildos and ketamine on me? What is
Right.
happening here? I don't want this to continue. So I'm nearing the turn to make towards the hotel, and I make the turn, and he's coming with me. He's still in lockstep with me, and I'm like, I'm going to go past the Rottweilers on purpose this
Right.
time. And
Right.
I do go past the Rottweilers. He's not expecting the Rottweilers. He flips out on the homeless. What the hell, man? You're going to give me a heart attack? This and the other thing. I triple time it to the hotel lobby doors, use my key card to get in, and say that is the last time I'm leaving this hotel lobby until I get picked up by my Uber later.
Smart decision there, I think at the end. Yeah, that you okay, you got a little taste of two different kinds of Vegas experiences, and certainly
I prefer the
one of
first.
them you will avoid, yes. But on your second trip, you were there for a business purpose, the blackjack ball, as you mentioned, and a
Yes.
great story on that. If anyone hasn't read it, they should definitely check it out. That's up on Casino Reports. Blackjack ball. Give me either favorite part of the whole experience and or something about it that you totally didn't see coming.
I mean, so for those of you that aren't aware, I mean, there's a few articles that live online about the blackjack ball. It is You can't just show up. You have to be invited. It's very select. It's, features current and past advantage players, for lack of a better term. So the past, the guys who aren't really doing it anymore, they're willing to have their name out there. But there's people that are like plying their trade. They don't want casinos knowing who they are or whatever. So this was, this has been going on for like 37 years. And it was pretty cool, just to be in the company of all these people. I was Roxy Roxborough like invited me as his guest, which is like, I this is royalty. This is legit royalty, And he introduced me to a bunch of people, and I talked to some of these guys, and it was a costume ball on top of it, which made it even more interesting.
Which
I was.
you were Hunter S. Thompson, and I was curious, is that a costume that you have around that you wear on occasion, or you put that together just for this trip?
No, I put it together for the trip, which I just ordered it off. There was a one on eBay featuring bucket hat, sunglasses, and a cigarette holder. And I just happened to have the shirt, which was funny because people asked me, "Oh, that's, where'd you get the shirt? Was that part of the costume?" I'm like, "Oh no, it's in my closet." So yeah, I went as Hunter S. Thompson. It was cool. Ed Thorpe was there, who I mean, if you don't know who Ed Thorpe is, I would consider Googling it. And I compared it in the story to like a bunch of like physicists meeting Einstein. Like without exaggeration, if Ed Thorpe doesn't exist, the whole world of advantage play, I mean, I guess somebody else might have figured it out eventually, but it wouldn't exist the way it exists right now. This is a man that like legitimately, no questions asked, changed the course of gambling history. And here I am with all these like, gamblers, you don't, when you think of the stereotypical gambler who does it for a living, you're not thinking of like a hero worshiper or a softie. You're just thinking of like a man on his own, a lonesome cowboy, if you will. You know what I'm saying? Man, people were just lining up to shake this man's hand to thank him. And it would really, and I'm just like kind of standing there eavesdropping on everybody. And with that, thank you so much, sir. These are people that might be worth, a few million, few $1 billion, going up to this guy saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. And it was pretty wild. It was a once in a lifetime opportunity. I'm despite, nearly getting dildoed and ketamine to death, I'm glad I did it.
Did being around all those advantage players and hearing their stories, did it give you any itch to try counting cards? Is that something that
No. Because they had a card counting tournament where they fan out a deck of cards, and the you had to like say like it's plus three or whatever. They were doing it in 10 seconds, 11 seconds, like, and being correct. Like, it's, I mean, it's, I'm like, ace, two. I mean, forget about it. No, but I mean, I am a little bit of an advantage player myself. When I not professionally, I dabble in it. I apparently, I'm so I still I'm still afraid to say it out loud in case it still exists somewhere. But I found some like great loophole that one of the online sites was promoing, and I hit it for like 18 months every day. It was awesome. Captain Jack was very impressed that I figured it out. High praise. But no.
I know what it is, but
Yeah.
yeah, we don't need to say it
We don't need
publicly.
to say it. But no, I mean, would I listen, I guess if I was 22, I think I would have a different viewpoint of it. You know what I'm saying? If I saw this world at age 22, if I was introduced to this world, my first trip to Vegas, yeah, I could definitely see myself saying, I have a mind for it. I think I could do it. But I don't have a mind for it today. I'm too old, man. My brain's not firing all cylinders, and I have too many, I have responsibilities, like it just, I, if I told my wife that I'm going to like start traveling the country to be an advantage card player, I would be down a wife.
And you don't need to do that anyway because you are now a tournament winning DFS player. Not, I shouldn't say now, it's not like you've never won one before,
That's true.
but not enough to necessarily make it a full living. But we got to talk
No.
about the fact that since we last spoke on a pod, you won a showdown slate on DraftKings, split it several ways, but
I
still,
did.
was it a $3 entry that you turned into
Yeah,
over two grand?
it was the $3, 118,000 lottery, which I enjoy doing because, whatever. especially with Showdown. I think Showdown, I mean, you have to know what you're doing, but I prefer bigger slates, right? I love that, I feel like my edge is more in the bigger slates, but because a lot of it is a little bit of luck, I think, when it comes to showdowns. But still, you got to know what you're doing. You got to build your lineup. You got to, tell the story. And yeah, I told the story, and I was right. And so it worked out pretty well.
And can we get the story of you sweating your lineup deep into the night,
Sure.
watching?
Absolutely. So,
He says knowing that there's no story there. Well, there is a story, but it's not
yeah,
the story
no,
of a sweat.
I'll tell you the story. The story goes like this. It was the Ravens Dolphins game the other night, and my lineup, I had Lamar Jackson, the captain, Derrick Henry, Devin Achane, whatever his name is, Andrews, I can't pronounce names, Mark Andrews.
I believe it's Achan, but my
Achane,
son corrects me on that one all the time. That's one he knows that I'm a little off on, but you're further off. Continue.
Ravens defense and the low own Greg Dulcich, a tight end, replacing Darren Waller. So yeah, I at around I you know the game kicks off around what 8:15 Eastern Standard. At around 9:45, I see that I got a few lineups cashing, and at which point I roll over and go to sleep, not having watched one snap of the game. I wake up around 2:30, take a leak, and I have a little. It's for whatever reason. I bring my phone to the bathroom so that I don't trip over anything on the way.
It's there as a light,
It's there
right?
as a light, but I have I'm superstitious, much to my chagrin. And one of my superstitions is I don't check my teams until I'm already in the bathroom. I have to be, just bear with me, man. That's it. And so
This is not in the top 25 weirdest things about you, so it's fine.
okay, right. So there I am. I got, holding my thing, taking a leak, open up the DraftKings app, and ba-bang, I'm like, holy crap, I won. It was fun. It's hard to go back to sleep after that, but I did. I managed to
Oh,
go
you
back
did.
to sleep.
Okay.
I did. I mean, if it was 20 grand, I probably would have stayed up, but two grand, I went back to sleep.
But
But yeah, it's
that
nice.
finances your DFS play for the rest of the season, pretty much, I would
Absolutely.
say. It pretty
Again,
much guarantees you're going to come out ahead on the season.
well, yeah, kind of. I mean,
Almost.
my NFL, I'm a low roller in everything except sometimes NFL DFS. There are times that Sunday, 12:101 rolls around, like, holy shit, I just have way too much more than I thought I was going to
But what's
have.
like your high? Like, you don't do anything above like a $20 Millie Maker entry, I assume. Or do you do a few smaller field higher stake?
I occasionally will do a smaller field higher if I have like a pretty good conviction. And honestly, my biggest issue with DFS through the years has been not paying close enough attention to my conviction. Like, there are times, we'll use NFL as an example, maybe twice every 3 years where I'm like, oh no, that's actually the lineup. That's the lineup. Actually, it just happened to me this past weekend, the 4 o'clock, the late slate. I thought, it's like 2 in the afternoon. I'll build a few lines for the late slate, whatever. And I'll build lineups until I'm tired of building lineups. $3, $3. I built my first lineup. I'm like, oh no, this is the lineup. So I put it in a $5 single entry, and I did awesome at it. But like, I don't have the conviction to be like, screw it. I'm going to put it in the $100. I'm going to put it in the bigger one. And I wish I did. But I again, I'm a low roller, so what do you get?
I assume that Brock Bowers was in that lineup,
Brock
because
Bowers
he
was
was
in
the
that
key
lineup.
to the whole slate, especially the late slate.
You had that Brock Bowers there, but yeah, conviction. That's been my. I'd love my dream is to be a professional DFS player. Like, it's just that simple. Because everyone says they're profitable at it. I am. I'm legitimately very profitable at it over the years. But again, children, mortgage, wife, yeah, it doesn't lend itself to, the pivot.
You're looking for a stable income, and DFS is fun side income, basically.
It is 1 Millie Maker, just one time, please.
All right, let's talk about the scandals that have been in the news. You always come equipped with takes. I'm going to hit you with a take of mine that I haven't shared anywhere, and then you can react to it or hit me with whatever takes are on your mind. So, Pete Rose bets on his own team. Before I was a sports betting guy, I didn't get the problem with that. I eventually came to get it that anytime you don't bet on your team for the exact same amount, you could be lightly tanking to help the odds that you for when you are going to bet on them. So, my take is That applies here also to all the morons saying no more player prop unders. First off, offshores will still have player prop unders, so there's that. But more to my point, Terry Rozier can go out there and intentionally score under 10 points three games in a row, bringing his point prop for the fourth game down a couple of points. Maybe now he's at 10.5, even though he's a guy who can get 15 points whenever he wants. So the fourth game, he has the mobsters and his friends bet his overs big. So that's my quick take, that getting rid of prop unders accomplishes nothing. Thoughts on that take and any of your takes on these scandals?
Yeah, I mean, it accomplishes nothing, obviously. I mean, the regulated sports betting market is but one spoke on the wheel of the sports betting market. Like, people were able to shave points successfully before online sports betting, you know? So, like, let's not pretend. I kind of look at things a lot of the times through my own lens, right? You know, I try to put myself in the shoes of every man, right? And if I am given an opportunity to make money on Terry Rozier, like if I was involved in it, like, oh yeah, no, I got firsthand knowledge that Terry Rozier is going to, like, you know, go under, I'm going to bet everything I have. Like, I have no qualm about it, like, ethically, right?
Okay, ethically, but
yeah. So
not factoring in the if I bet everything I have, it makes it more obvious that there's something going on.
No,
mean ethically.
Now, I have a problem ethically with being the person saying, all right, Terry, go under.
Right.
But if I had knowledge of it, I have no ethical qualms about it. So I'm guessing, obviously, I'm not alone, that other people probably would have no ethical qualms about making money on something like this. And clearly there are people that have no ethical qualms about, like, perpetrating said thing. So, you know, I feel like, you know, there's like a big, like, willful head in the sand aspect to all this, where we know that this has been happening, that the fix has been in sports since sports became, like, it's always going to be there. It's just always going to be there. And the fact, and I will parrot, like, you know, the talking points, because they are true. Porter, Rozier, you know, allegedly, just throw allegedly in everywhere, I don't care, right?
Although Porter admitted to it, so yeah.
But all of these things were caught as a result of the legalized sports betting market. That's true, right?
Yep.
How many, you know, so, like, is there two other instances of people that haven't been caught? Or is there 2,000 instances of people that haven't been caught? I lean more probably towards the 2,000, you know, especially in smaller sports, especially in individual sports, you know, especially, you know, ping pong, tennis, boxing, UFC, you know, like, you know, an individual, you've been covering boxing your whole life. I mean, it's so easy.
Right.
Fall in the fourth. I mean, how hard is this, you know?
Right.
So, like, we're never going to, like, we're never going to do away with it. I get maybe if we were a communist country and, like, you know, everyone, there was no such thing as, you know, money, you know, imagine all the people, you know, that's not going to happen.
That's what John Lennon was actually thinking about, imagining a world with no need to rig sports events.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to really, truly do everything that you can to stop it, then, you know, the sport radars of the IC360s should be, you know, there somehow, some way, convince all the offshores to make all this
right.
Convince all the prediction markets, right?
Right.
Convince all, you know, convince, seriously,
underground bookies too.
Offer them, like, a reward if you hear something, like,
right.
Go above and beyond and, like, bring the whole system or as much of the system as you can in, you know, under the sunlight.
Right.
But until then, like, it's not going to happen. And I, it's bad. Nobody wants it. Nobody wants to think that, like, this stuff is happening, but, like, it's been happening forever. We're seeing more of it now, I'm assuming, because the light is being shined on it.
Right.
I'd have to imagine that these pro athletes at the highest levels might, you know, we have teenagers. Like, when's the last time you saw a teenager with a cigarette in their mouth? Forget vapes and all that. But when's the last time you saw a teenager with a cigarette? You learn eventually. Right. You know, generationally, you learn you don't do this. It's stupid, right? Same principle is going to apply here. Like, you know, I really, I got to be very careful here. I know a D1 college athlete, okay, who plays a very, a popular sport. He says he's a sophomore. He's been approached a half dozen times already in his college career to miss a free throw, to do this. He said it happens to his teammates all the time. It's not, they're not surprised by it. It's pervasive. It's everywhere. People are always looking to find the edge. And if it means cheating, so be it. So it's there. It's always going to be there. The only way to combat it is to watch for strange betting patterns. And so the only way to, if we're serious about it, then reach out to the offshores. It should be one giant thing. I mean, again, if I'm an offshore, right? What's skin off my nose is it? I want a clean playing field also. I don't want to be taken to the cleaners because, so there's some inside information.
Yeah, the manipulation is definitely bad for the
For
operators, whether they're
everybody,
legal or not.
right.
So let me talk then about the other side of this scandal, or the separate scandal, the private poker game stuff. Is it just me, or is finding out that Chauncey Billups is part of some private poker game that you're invited to not that exciting, and not going to make you drop everything to go play in this game? Never mind Damon Jones, whoever he is, as one of the face cards. But even Billups, he's not exactly Leo DiCaprio. That part of the story doesn't fully add up to me.
Chauncey Billups is not moving the needle for. I can't imagine. Like it would have to. I think it would have to be like George Clooney or Leo DiCaprio for me to want to to be. Oh wow, I gotta play this poker game. But and again, cheating at poker. Like come on. It's part of it. Like it feels like a fool and his money a little bit. And you've seen like the tweets from a couple of years ago. This was like it seemed to be like a known thing among like the poker pros. Like you stay away from this game, right? And like I don't know if I'm a player. I'm not a pro poker player. I'm not an amateur poker player. But I have to imagine if I show up to a game and like I lose and everyone else is winning, I'm like, well, something's fishy here. I mean, what's the, if you can't spot the sucker, it's you, right? So I mean, there's an element of a fool and his money to me that like the poker story, it really does. I mean, I could give two shits, honest to God. It's like, go
I mean,
ahead.
it's fascinating to write about and read about, and the mob involvement and all the mobster names and all that stuff. But the people who got fleeced, it's hard to feel too bad for them. They kind of had it coming, I guess,
I
if they couldn't
mean,
sniff out that something was amiss.
when you're walking down, in Times Square or in Vegas, do you sit down and oh, you that three card Monte game, that looks beatable. Like you play it, you lose. Tough shit. I don't know. I mean, the tears, I'm having a hard time building up the tears for that. That's just criminal behavior. That's just, people being dicks, right? Whereas the sports betting stuff, it's playing with like the fabric of society. You know what I'm saying? Like it's bigger than just like the few people that are actually involved with it. Because you sports, spoiler, pretty big to the American culture.
And I think back to your point about what, that there's not much you can do about it other than try and expose it and shine the sunlight on it and all that. I guess the other thing is just the leagues and, the authorities, that there have to be severe penalties. That's the only other thing that's going to tamp down on it, is catch it and then try to gradually over time communicate to these athletes your career is over and you may be going to jail if you mess around with this stuff.
I mean, and the other part of the problem, and I'm going to butcher this, but George Carlin like famously said, half the people are stupid. And half of those are even stupider. And so like you're when you're dealing with some, if you're a dummy, you're going to do dumb shit. And if you're a dummy with money, you're probably going to do dumber shit. So I mean, it's just it's out there. I mean, I consider myself to be smarter than the average bear. I've done plenty of dumb shit in my life. You know what I mean?
I think you fully butchered that Carlin quote. I think it's that take the average IQ, look how low it is, and then recognize that half the people are
Right,
below
dumb,
that.
right. Well, I told you I did say I was
You
going to
said you were
butcher
going to
it,
put right. You did.
so I deserve credit.
And I took the over on you butchering it.
Yeah,
If
that.
you can
Well,
over under that.
no, but I mean, listen. As I said earlier, I think that like as time goes on, the pros at the highest levels will they'll realize that you get caught. If you get caught, and look at all the people that we've caught, you're done. You're banned. You're out of the league. Your millions are gone. Like So you would think again that this would, you know, well, let's start vaping instead of smoking, please.
Right. Okay. Couple more quick things. The gods of online slots must have known that you were coming on the podcast this week because they blessed us with a new FanDuel Casino Hoof and Puff game. It's Hoof and Puff Money Mansion. I'm not ready with a full review because I haven't experienced all the bonus games yet, but I played it a little bit, and my initial thought is better than the last one, the Hoof and Lots of Puff, but otherwise I'm not totally sure how I feel yet. I know you dabbled a bit. Any quick thoughts?
Yeah, it's not my favorite game. I know you
Yeah.
love it. It doesn't
Oh,
do it.
all the Hoof and Puffs don't do much for you. Okay.
Yeah, but once again, classic low roller fashion, I prefer, you know, I prefer games, you know, I'm tired of like, I want to win a little, a lot, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? For my 20 cent
You're not.
spin, I want to win a bunch of times.
You're not into the potential extreme dry streak of 50 spins in a row, win you nothing, and then maybe there's a big one. That's not for you.
I'd prefer it the other way. I'd prefer like the
Okay.
chance to win the big prize, but you know, keep me engaged with like little dings along the way, you
Right.
know.
Okay.
You know what game I love? It's an old one, Jumanji. You ever play Jumanji?
I have played it.
I really enjoy that one.
I liked it when I had some wins on it, but otherwise,
Right.
not. I think I've gotten a little bit spoiled by some of the modern graphics that
Yeah,
the
no, for
Jumanji
sure.
one is. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but Jumanji's old. But I love the bonus round because you get to roll dice and that's
Right. Oh, right. Where you're going around the table.
yeah,
Yeah, that
it's
is a good
fun.
bonus round. You're right.
It's
Okay.
fun. It's fun.
Couple of questions about the podcast that you're hosting,
Yeah.
and in case I didn't enunciate clearly enough, podcasts, plural.
Yes. Yep.
How are you finding business abetting? I know your main concern was having to find guests, and luckily that hasn't
Yeah.
fallen on you much at all. So, how do you like doing the one-on-one interviews?
Yeah, I like it. My goal with it was, you know, the Business of Betting podcast. It sounds like a pretty dry operation, business of bet, right? But
Right.
I can't do dry. So I've been trying to some success, depending, you know, on the interview subject, to like burst out a little bit of from the gambling world. You know, I want the gambling stuff, and I want to know about what your business is doing, and I want to know what you're doing, but I'm also quite frankly curious about what you had for breakfast, you know, and try to like create more of like a holistic, you know, a whole person type interview. I think it's going well. It's again, it's something different because if you look at the landscape for the gambling podcast, a lot of them, especially on the business side, they all follow like a pretty predictable pattern. And I don't know. I'm looking to do something a little bit different. Most people
Yeah.
have been game to do it, and I think I've gotten some like pretty cool stuff out of it. And yeah, and I hope to get more cool stuff out of it. So, you know, tune in, Business of Betting Podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
No,
It's all right.
I've been enjoying it. I think you have injected just the right level of Edelstein energy and creativity into it without it going like totally off the rails and not
Right.
covering the business of betting. So,
Right.
and since you asked, soy-based yogurt with fruits and granola and a little honey was my breakfast this morning.
I didn't ask because I knew I was going to be personally offended by whatever it is that you decided to throw at me
I'm
now.
pretty sure you asked. I think I heard you asking in there. It was an
Right.
implied ask. And your other one is Primetime Props, where I really think you've settled into a groove there. I enjoy the show. Never miss an episode. And for better and for worse, I've been following some of the picks. It was going well for a while. Last 2 weeks, I've lost more than I've won. But any quick comments on the experience of hosting Primetime Props?
Yeah, it's. I mean, this is all I ever wanted to do. I mean, you know, the only reason I'm sitting here with you today is because, you know, like 10 years ago, I sent a cold email to Cal Spears at
Right.
RotoGrinders, and I'm like, I love D this is this DFS thing is pretty awesome, and this is who I am. I'm a writer, and I want to work for RotoGrinders. I want to, you know, play Le'Veon Bell. You know, I wanted to do that. You know, and he's like, we don't have anything at this time. Stay in touch, blah blah blah. And I stayed in touch. You know, one thing leads to another. And here I am covering the gambling industry when all I really want to do is host Primetime Props. But
Right.
it's fine. It's, you know, it's good. It's good. I'll win. Once I win the Millie Maker, then I think I'll just shuffle over to just covering the DFS at that point. But until such a time, that's it. But yeah, I love it. It's me, Justin Carlucci, Keith Eyster, and Justin Bales. Three sharp guys that they really do know their stuff. and I get to play the host, you know, and I'll inject an idea every now and again, but you know, it you know, I'm just, you know, it's like I'm having a blast with it. And to give you an idea of how much fun I'm having with it, we record and it's live at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday. For my entire professional life, you will never find me anywhere near work at 4 o'clock on a Friday. No matter what
Right.
job I ever had, I'm
Right. And
done.
for this, you make an exception.
For this, I gladly make an exception, you know, because
Right.
it's just fun. It's
Well, I'm
just
glad you're living your dream and that working on in-game casino reports, et cetera, proved a means to that end. We'll cut it off there for now, but I'm sure you'll be back on again in a month or two. Thanks for stopping by, Low Rollers.
absolutely.
Okay, my thanks again to Jeff. So I don't really have a compelling personal gambling story for you this week, and I woke up Thursday morning unsure what I'd talk about to end the podcast. And then I logged on to Twitter at 7:06 a.m., and my feed was blowing up with the breaking news that the partnership between Penn National and ESPN Bet is no more. So you're getting a second quick news commentary this week. Now, Jeff's Business of Betting podcast is supposed to be our more sports betting-y pod, and Low Rollers is our more casino-y pod, and this is, of course, mostly a sports betting story, but not entirely, as Penn announced that going forward, it will focus more on online casino, which, as we all know and often discuss, is where the real money is anyway. It's just limited as to how many states regulate it. So, look, Penn's failures in the online sports betting space are staggering. It is not a hot take at all to rag on them for how much money they burned just for the opportunity to ascend to like number six nationally. But online casino does offer that hope for a lifeline. Turning away from the online casino aspect of this, though, I do just want to say, I wonder to what extent the rise of prediction markets was the clincher here. Anyone can offer sports betting anywhere now, basically, because there are no rules anymore. You know, we're in the age of self-certification, which translates to I'll do what I want. And that may have been the factor that ultimately led Penn to stop plunging money into ESPN Bet, cut its losses, accept that it is never going to get better, it's only going to get worse. I believe prediction market sports betting is going to seriously speed up the great consolidation. And, you know, one assumes DraftKings and FanDuel will survive and probably BetMGM and Caesars too. But beyond that, who knows? There just isn't that much room for too many profitable online sports books once there are so many unregulated or lightly regulated options out there for people who want to bet. So, not that the Penn ESPN Bet partnership was going to survive much longer anyway, but I think it's safe to say prediction markets hastened the end. RIP ESPN Bet. But of course, long live Low Rollers, your home for small stakes and hot takes.